That's another thing. I'm an underdog. I like underdogs. I prefer underdogs. There's nothing wrong with being handed things. I can't, like, if I was handed something, I'd take it. But I really have an affinity for someone who was nervous, shy, anxiety, beat up as a kid, never thought they'd amount to anything, ended up on drugs, ended up in jail, and now they're a millionaire. Those stories are incredible, man.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey friends, welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I am super excited today to bring you my new friend, fellow podcast host, owner of Valbert Marketing, and just an amazing guy, Ben Albert. Ben, how are you today?
Andy, I'm doing fantastic, man. I know this. You've put hundreds of hours into this podcast, and I genuinely appreciate you giving me a little bit of that time, and I hope to have some fun today.
Well, thank you. So I am just honored to have you here. You know, we were connected by the amazing Sarah Elkins. She's a friend of mine, an amazing connector, just an all-around great person. And anytime she gives me a recommendation for a connection, I'm like, wow, this is going to be cool. So I'm excited.
So, I'm happy I made the Sarah Elkins list. That's pretty cool in itself.
Right? It is. She's top-notch. And she is. It's an honor to be in the group of people she keeps in her circle. So.
Absolutely.
So Ben, there is so much going on in the world. I just like to start out asking everybody for a little perspective on the world and what you see as the most positive thing right now.
Ooh, the most positive thing. I like that, because the way that question started, I went to the negatives, and whether it's political or COVID or economical. One thing that I found, and every morning I look myself in the mirror, I do my gratitude, I journal about it. When you have this gratitude mindset, you start to realize that, I mean, you and I don't know your entire backstory. You don't know mine, and we can get into it if you want. We're not at the top of the mountain, you know, waving around the flag, driving our Lambos. Like, we haven't reached, I don't know even where I'm going with this, but we're in most of the time, you, I, the listener, we're in like the top one, if not 10% in the world. There's a lot of people that have struggles where they don't listen. They don't have an opportunity to listen to a podcast. Yeah. They don't have an opportunity to jump on a Zoom. They don't have the education and the opportunity we have. So no matter what's going on in the political economic climate, when I center myself on the fact that even the probability of me being born, that I was chosen from my father into my mother, I was chosen, the probability of that is lower than getting struck by lightning multiple times.
Wow.
So all that stuff that's happening in the world, if you realize what a great opportunity we have, good, bad, indifferent, I still feel like we have it way better than many people, and I'm blessed that to have what I do have. So honestly, it doesn't matter what's going on outside of me. There's always opportunity to be found, and there's always someone to be loved, and et cetera, et cetera.
I love that perspective. That really just kind of getting chills, just picturing that, like the probability and the chance that you're even alive, like that alone, let alone being fortunate enough to have the technology to sit here and chat and be in the space that we're in. It really does flatten the curve and take things off the table to gripe about when we look at, oh, what could happen? What should happen? How's the world? And yet we're, you know, you and I are still coming home to a warm house with a meal on the table.
Mm-hmm. I have joggers on, so I'm nice and warm. Mm-hmm. I've got a heater next to me. I'm using a microphone. And at the end of the day, if I notice myself complaining, I'm like, come on, man. Like, I'm just very fortunate to even have an opportunity to be on this podcast with you. You've already got me rambling, because I don't know if anyone's ever asked me that question. It's a fun one.
Well, it's, you know, it's like you said at the beginning, your mind tends to go to, oh, wait, what's going on in the world? And right away, we want to start thinking about, oh, you know, the catastrophe, the possibilities, the thing we saw on the news this morning or last night. But if we take our mind out of that, and, you know, you hit it on the head with being grateful and focusing on gratitude and journaling about it, that really, when I started trying to focus on being grateful, I did the thing where you go, oh, I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for, you know, security I have. And you think of all the big things, but not something like I'm sitting in a warm space. I have comfortable pants on. And those really are the things that we need to pay attention to, because that adds up to a lot when you start really thinking about it.
Yeah, it puts things in perspective. People that are really struggling, they still have opportunity, and people that aren't struggling really humbles you to give back more because of how freaking good we do have in comparison to people that don't have those luxuries.
Exactly. And if you can sit in your own space and be grateful for having a pair of socks to put on, it does make you more aware when you walk out your door and you see someone who might not, that, oh, you know, I have two pairs, I could give them one or whatever.
Anyone listening, and we can do this after this, if you YouTube child gets a banana for Christmas, there's actually a few different videos. There's one that's my favorite. I'll send it to you after this, Andy. But basically, for whatever reason, there's multiple videos of the like. It's these children are getting a banana for Christmas, and the kid's like, I got a banana. And then the girl's like, I got a lemon. Now, I don't know if there's additional presents. That's right. Beside the point. But they were handed a banana and a lemon. And they're just ecstatic to be alive.
Right.
And I feel like when we're younger, that's the state we live in. And then we're almost like taught wrong. Because those children are happy. A lemon?
Yeah.
For Christmas?
Whatever they got, it doesn't have to be this big thing. That's enough.
That's something that I need to try, and anyone should try. Give your very young kid a really crappy present. And since they don't already have an expectation, I bet they'll be excited to receive anything you give them.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind, because, you know, we look at, okay, how have our expectations changed since we were kids? Now, how do we take that to the next step and not do that to our children and not take away the joy that they have from the small things?
Yeah.
That's a great exercise. I will post a link to that video in the description here, so you guys can all watch that after you're done listening the whole episode. Don't go away quite yet. So Ben, I like to ask everybody, I like to deep dive on the awkward thing, and we got you here because the world really wants to know, what is your awkward thing that you've had to own in order to live this grateful life you're living right now?
100%. We could go a million ways with it. A friend of mine, Stan Phelps, co-wrote a book called Pink Goldfish. It's a whole series of goldfish, but specifically Pink Goldfish talks about flaws and how your flaws make you awesome. When everybody seems like the sameness, our awkward, our eccentricities, our flaws are actually what make us awesome. It's what makes us flawsome. And if you're a business person or any really person, it's almost like leaning into your flaws and accepting them is a beneficial thing that'll make you stand out from the rest. So one thing that wasn't in the book that I did recently, and this wasn't in preparation for this interview, it just was the stars aligned in a weird way, is I did 30 days of flaws, and I challenge anybody to try it. I created the hashtag, no one else did it, but I did it on my own, and it was hashtag flawsom, 30 days of flaws. And I really dive deep. Like at the end of the day, like I'm kind of a weirdo for sure. When I was younger, I wanted to be a basketball player, even though I was the shortest kid in school. The only shorter person to me was a little Asian girl named Olivia Lee, but I still wanted to be the next Michael Jordan. I started a podcast, even though I didn't speak the first 13 years of my life. I'm a chronic overthinker. That's probably part of why I started the podcast. I have really bad anxiety. One thing that's kind of humorous is I have less anxiety on Zoom where everybody's like anxious and trying to figure out tech. I have right. more anxiety when I'm at like a mixer with 200 people and I'm like looking for a camera to hide behind or something. So I'm all over the place. I don't want to name all 30 flaws, but these are unique things about me that make me awkward. But yeah, I mean, I want to work with people that have struggles as well. Like I like, that's another thing. I'm an underdog. I like underdogs. I prefer underdogs. There's nothing wrong with being handed things. I can't like, if I was handed something, I'd take it. But I really have an affinity for someone who was nervous, shy, anxiety, beat up as a kid, never thought they'd amount to anything, ended up on drugs, ended up in jail, and now they're a millionaire. Those stories are incredible, man. You got me on tangents today, but that's how I feel.
I love those. Those are some of my favorite stories too. Whenever I'm, you know, watching even two teams and then you hear the struggles of the one versus the one that's always been on top, you just think, I kind of want that team to just win and, you know, walk off that field with their head held high and be like, we got here whatever we've been through. I love this concept of changing it to flossom. I'm a big fan of the words that we say change how we think based on what we're telling ourselves. And we can take those things, and that's the whole idea of owning your awkward, is that whatever it is that you might feel vulnerable about is typically your superpower, and that's that same concept. So I'm curious, was there a point for yourself? You mentioned this book about the pink goldfish. Was there a point where you noticed that difference, where these things could be used to your benefit or to move you forward?
One of the first main memories that come to mind, and I'm sure others will spur up to the surface. I'm in college. This was a whole shabam, actually. I'm in college. I had just played basketball at lunch, and I have like a little bit of acute asthma. So coming back in, and it was hot out, and coming in from the hot outdoors to the cold inside and not having like much of a bridge or a gap in between, I'm like sitting in class and I'm just sweating and I have like an asthma attack. And the part of why I think I remember this comment was it was just one of those weird days. Later on in class, we're working on a group project. And one of the people, I got good grades in school. And honestly, when I worked on group projects, we always kicked ass because I wouldn't let us not kick ass. Like I would take like the weight of everybody on my shoulders. That's just how my brain worked. This girl said to me, "Ben, you overthink way too much." So what do you think happened when I heard that statement?
Well, I've been told that too. So then, of course, I know the answer. You're going to start thinking about it even more.
And I'm still thinking about it to this day. And I didn't have this comeback, and I wasn't really quick-witted or want to put anybody down in the moment anyways. But I started to realize, because I'm overthinking, isn't that why I'm successful and you're not? Mm. Isn't that why you're making snarky comments and having other people hold the weight when you just want to chat the entire time? And I'm not trying to shame people for being social, but she was shaming my like analyticalness. And what I realized later on is being analytical was one of those possible flaws or eccentricities that actually allowed me to be successful.
Right.
I just didn't have clarity at the time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is when I think when they're first pointed out, it seems to me it's more often that flaws are pointed out as a flaw, as a drawback, as something that's going to hold us back, because it's typically in the context of why you're not the same as the rest of the group, or why you're not performing in one specific area, and that overshadows all the other areas that you are performing well in, that quote unquote flaw is holding you back from. But if you didn't have that thing, you wouldn't be good in all the other areas. So unfortunately, we hear that, and that's the story we start telling ourselves, because it's a story that was told to us. And it does take until sometimes years later, if ever, for some people to realize that, wait, that's the reason that all these other things are working out for me. And I'm glad you were able to see that at a relatively young age, compared to, you know, when it's retirement age and you're going, oh, I wish I would have realized that.
Yeah, I guarantee at retirement age, I'm still going to say, I wish I would have realized that. I think it, we can't, we're, there's no perfection, right? I feel like there's constant evolution of self. And my goal is to evolve as quickly as possible. But I guarantee I'm going to be in my deathbed saying, I missed out on that. Like, it happens to all of us. It's, we're, no one's different in that regard.
Yeah. So I'd be curious, once you started to understand that and saw that this analytical skill is what makes you successful versus someone else, was there, were there changes that you made to be, to your behavior or your approach enable to, in order to use that differently?
Sure. I think none of this was intentional, I don't really think. Nowadays, there's more intentionality in what I do, but a lot of life, I was just stumbling forward, trying to clean up bloody noses half the time. So at the end of the day, I see it all the time in the top performers, whether it's in sports or in any regard, but sports is a great example. Usually the top performers have a disposition for athletics. But they didn't have the easiest ride up. They're the first one in, the last one out. They have grit, they have determination, they have mindset, whether they realize it or not. Because I feel like a chip on your shoulder, I feel like being shamed, I feel like not thinking you're good enough, or actually not being good enough, actually allows you to overachieve in the long run. Because you dive deeper into the nuances that someone that might already have a general skill might not dive into. If you go to like social dynamics, and if you look at like, I'm in the marketing and sales industry. If you look at marketing and sales and leadership and even like motivational speakers, a lot of the tip top people will tell you, like Ed Milet says it, Brene Brown, Tony Robbins, all these names will say, like, I grew up shy, I was very introverted, and then I don't know the science behind it, but something happens in their brain where they start seeing nuances and making connections, and they overcompensate and they overdeliver. And because of that overcompensating and that overdeliver, they actually become someone that people, like, people were just chatty in the front. It's not like you become chatty, but you start to understand the world in a different way. That right. You can show up at a high level. Mm-hmm. I'd love if you could have someone come on and explain the science, because it might sound pseudosciencey, but it's absolute fact. Like, it's coming from a place of lack with the capacity of more usually right. creates the highest achievers, rather than yeah. coming from a place of lack and then just kind of having a free ride and then realizing you're humbled one day when someone who was below you starts to level up and kick your ass.
And there definitely is science to it. I've read a couple different books on the psyche behind that kind of overcompensating that people do if they feel somewhat neglected or pushed down, or like they have to be shameful for where they're coming from. I would misquote everything if I tried to say it right now, but but there is definitely the way our mind works. I feel like we are posed with a challenge, and our natural instinct is to overcome that challenge. And so if that challenge is then, you know, being shy or holding us back or whatever that is, we're going to push through that. And then sometimes in that race to push through, we end up in the front where we weren't even necessarily trying to be the person cutting through the ribbon, but now we are, because we had to work so hard just to keep up that our muscles are so well trained that we are running faster than anybody else. And like you said, with sports, as you were saying that analogy with sports, I was picturing just that, you know, how the hottest fires forge the metal and they have to go through that being broken down. And then that's what makes them the strongest.
I like that analogy for it.
Yeah. It's something we all have to go through. Now just finished spending 30 days focusing on your flaws. And I like I said, the word flawsome is great, because if you're focusing on negative, then that's what you're going to see. But if you're finding a way to see the negative as a positive, as a flawsome thing, then I feel like that has to change your dynamic. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about what that was like from the beginning of that 30 days to the end. Was it easy right away? Did it take some kind of training of your own mental space to see it positively?
Yeah, it's easier in the front. I'm rebellious. I can be a bit boring. I'm analytical. Simple things. To be completely transparent, like anyone, I have flaws that I don't want to like put on a flag and wait for the whole world to see. Like we all have things that are flawed, and to address those is more difficult. For the most part, I just try to avoid them. So by like the end of it, I think the last flaw is I'm like, I hate committing to stuff like this. Glad that it's over. And then that was day 30. And then I never talked about it ever again until this moment. But really the reason I did it was to do kind of a mental exercise for myself, to take kind of a deep look at things that actually are my flaws and not necessarily justify them, but give myself permission to accept it, tell the world that like I'm over analytical. I forget half the ones I did. I was like pushing it out like it's homework, to be honest. But really in the back, even from day one, my goal was not just to do the exercise for myself, but to give other people permission to kind of do that exercise, them not the full 30 days, but just kind of take a look at it. Because I don't know the metrics off the top of my head. Some posts were better than others. I actually might go back on it. I got like emphatic agreements from people like, dude, I feel the same way, or that's not a flaw, or like things like that. Yeah. And it was almost like just by giving my own vulnerability, I was giving other people permission to jump on and be vulnerable about it too, but in a soft way that didn't have to offend. Or not one person like gave me shit. It was actually either me too, or that's not a flaw, or no comment at all. There was no just like, it was like just support. I don't know how to explain it. I haven't really thought about it. It was just people were supportive of it. And I hope that I in some way helped someone. Not sure.
And that's the tricky thing with social media. We put these things out there and we don't always know the impact it has on the world.
Yeah.
You could have changed someone's day. You could have changed their approach to one of their own flaws that has them on a path to success they might not have had the courage to pursue. And you may never find that out.
Yeah, it's hard to get a KPI or a metric on the impact, but it's like creating a ripple in the ocean. And the real beauty in being vulnerable, and this conversation's like completely different than most podcasts I've been on, and I'm cool with that. The beauty in being vulnerable and being raw is giving other people that permission as well, and not deciding you should do this, you need to do this, this is how it's done. Just putting your laundry on the table, and letting people pick up what kind of gifting your laundry and letting people pick up what they need. And for all I care, someone hates me and never listens to me again, and that's probably beneficial to both of us. But you never know if one of your listeners, or if I brought a listener to your show and they love you, they love me, who knows the impact we can create? It's really hard to quantify.
Yeah. One thing that I love about the exercise you just went through, and you called it out, was that, you know, the beginning is that easy part where you're like, oh, you know what, this is, you know, I can start with all the physical attributes I'm not happy with that everybody can see. And then I get into the next layer of the things that people who know me a little better probably know. And then you get down to that deep layer of, am I ready to say this to the world or admit it to myself? And I think by going through an exercise for that length of time, it forces you to address, even if you don't do it publicly, but just to acknowledge even with yourself, what's that next thing that I don't want to talk about because I'm talking about all of the other issues above that.
Yeah. I might even, do you want me to pull it up, or you can change the subject? Because I swear literally 20 days in, it had officially became homework.
Wow.
And it was on my calendar and I didn't like doing it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like three of my flaws was me just projecting my frustration.
I love that.
Yeah. And flaw 30 was I'm easily frustrated, happy, it's over, peace sign.
I love that. So how did you feel on day 31 when you did walk away? Did you feel like you were, you know, more aware or acknowledging things, or was it just like, oh God, what did I sign up for? I'm never trying anything like that again, or maybe a mix of both.
It's a mix of both. So I feel that people learn at different speeds in different categories for different reasons. As simple as someone might pick up math really quick, but be slow to pick up creative writing. Mm-hmm. So we all have different skill sets at different timelines. I notoriously take longer than most people in almost every single category. But once I get it, I usually overachieve. So it's like I'm longer to get there. But once I get there, I usually kick their ass. In this case, by like day 15, I felt like I got what I needed. Mm-hmm. Like I was brainstormed. I wrote a bunch down at once. Like I felt like I had already kind of healed my need for it. But then my ego was attached to the fact that I created a hashtag 30 days of flaws.
Right.
That it actually went from like inner work to homework.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's a flaw there. Someone with a better understanding of the psychology might be able to tell me it is. But at one point I was like, I feel like I got what I needed out of this exercise. And now I'm actually only doing it for the social validation that right. I don't want to be seen as a quitter. Because I committed to it. But maybe that's part of the exercise.
It could be. And there is something to publicly saying that you're going to get to this place that forces you to do it and push you past where you want to go. I know I've had things where I've arbitrarily pick a number. I'm going to do 10 days of grateful. I'm going to do 15 days of whatever. And same thing by, you know, a third or half of the way through it, I'm like, okay, I feel like I've shared enough or I've done enough. Why do I have to do the additional 7 or 8? It's like, I could just delete all the old posts and maybe no one would know and they'd forget, but that's not genuine. So I can relate to that a lot.
Yeah. Hey, well, what of those exercises was your favorite?
I did one that was similar. It was called Share Your Ugly. And it was me. I just started with this post where I just did a live video on social media, sitting on my couch at like 2 a.m. My hair was not done. I was in my pajamas. I looked like crap. And it was one of those, hey, you know what? You guys see all the work I'm doing. You see the pretty stuff. But this is the reality behind the scenes, is that there are days where I'm sitting here, you know, up late at night or up early doing the work, and it isn't pretty. And this is what life is like. There's good days, there's bad days. And we need to see that, because we all put out there the finished product. And that's not what I'm about. I don't want that, but I have to make sure that I'm purposefully putting out those days that are uglier. But it was one of those where I think I did 10 days. And by the time I get to, you know, day 6 or 7, I was just like, oh, okay. How many of these can I put out there? Because I felt like it's not all that bad. So yeah, that moment was there, but I don't necessarily have that moment 10 days in a row. So Ben, I really want to hear a little bit more about Balbert Marketing and your journey to get there and what you offer, because you do some amazing things. You work with all sorts of people. Can you tell us more about what that's about?
Yeah, man. And the whole conversation's been humbling ultimately, Andy, because yeah, it's we're looking at all these flaws and struggles and awkwardnesses. And I started Balbert Marketing during the pandemic. I was furloughed from my sales executive role. Our biggest service was video, and we did it nationwide. So there was no travel, there was no in-person video, there was no sales, there was no fulfillment of sales that we had already made. So it was a complete, you know, crapshoot.
Wow.
So I'm furloughed for no animosity. Honestly, I would have furloughed myself too if I was in that scenario where I had to cut people off. No big deal. And in just over a year, again, this was in COVID, and now we're a little bit past it, but in just over a year, I replaced my sales executive income as a sole entrepreneur.
Wow.
And we can dissect that as much as we want. We could do that on another show. But one thing that's humbling kind of being at a loss of words and talking about these flaws and these awkwardnesses is it's not like I just decided I'm going to leave my job today because I'm passionate about this thing. I'm again, if you're passionate about something, I recommend you do it, get started now. But it's not like I just cut ties and dived into something.
Right.
I had spent almost 30 years of my life struggling, drug addiction when I was younger, struggling through that, not doing anything with my career, just started to get some career momentum, then getting humbled by the fact that all that momentum was stunted. And all these things were actually happening for me because they were preparing me for that opportunity that just happened. I don't know what it is, if it's God, if it's luck, if it's fate, but all these skills and struggles had stacked on that when I had an opportunity to go off as an entrepreneur, which was the first time I had tried it in 29 years. It's not like I had dreamed of it or had entrepreneurs on my wall.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I was called and the timing was right enough that I got lucky. And it's just humbling to look at all the struggles and how it kind of put me in a position to be successful once I actually went off on my own.
Yeah, it's interesting. Your journey into that is different than so many others, because so many people have this goal that I want to do this thing. I want to go in this place and I can't wait to quit my job. And they're so almost begrudgingly in their day job all the time thing. I can't wait to get out because this is what I want to do. Yours came from a direct and immediate need. The world is put on hold. I've got to step into this. And there is something about being a little hungry that forces you to be successful.
Yeah. And this is a little abstract, but I think there's something about being called to doing something, not intentionally planning out this perfect circumstance, but circumstances forced me into unemployment. But my previous experience with podcasting on a musical podcast, having sales and marketing experience, having leadership experience, failing, understand what it feels like to fail, kind of being in a dark place, was all preparation for that time when I was called to do something bigger. But it's not like I had a North Star with a map and a five-step plan to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like I was just thrust into it and called to do something different. And luckily was prepared enough not to totally screw up. And I'm not perfect, but that's how I see it.
Right. Well, and in business and life, there's bound to be, like you mentioned, the failures and the screw up. There's bound to be these things that happen, but those all create lessons and experience so that you don't screw up bigger later, essentially.
Mm-hmm. 100%. So, and here's the thing. I've said this once before. I'll say it again. If this all happened to me 5 years ago, I would have failed.
Mm.
That's okay. Like I would have failed probably every single, for some reason, 2020 was just the year. I almost said 2020 was the year of luck, which is the dumbest statement I've ever heard. But for me, it launched me into a whole different life that I didn't even imagine possible, because every year prior, and this is maybe me being modest, but I'm confident really that every year prior, I probably would have screwed it up. But for whatever reason, I didn't this time.
I can relate to that because there are some things that 2020 slowed down for me, especially in my business. You know, I was just starting to get my feet wet as a motivational speaker and getting some gigs in 2019 and really feeling like, oh, 2020 is going to be the year. And then, of course, it was the year of nothing. But in retrospect, that allowed me to get so many things in order that I needed to focus on so that my business was set up for better growth, so that now it can be more successful. So I don't sit here with a lot of regrets about that. And fortunately for myself, I was new enough in the business that it wasn't like it took away my livelihood. I was just getting started in that world.
Mm.
So I think things, you know, happen for the right time. They give us the lessons we need. And when we then, if we can value those and see those, that's where we're going to have that success. We have to see every failure as an opportunity to learn and to do better and to say, okay, well, that's getting me ready for a bigger success later, or to avoid that same failure being more catastrophic because maybe there's more at stake if you hadn't learned that lesson before you were doing it by yourself.
I couldn't agree more. They say it's hard to see the forest when you're in the trees. And that's usually even the case in that moment, that it doesn't feel like it's happening for you and it doesn't feel like you're going anywhere. But the moment you're, and it's not like a simple flick your finger, but the moment you're able to step out of the commotion, you actually see that, okay, maybe that happened because of there is a meaning behind why that happened to you.
Yeah, and to bring it back to how you started this, you know, when you're in those moments, you have to be grateful for whatever's going on, whatever's going right, whatever could have gone worse that didn't, like whatever small thing you can find to be grateful for that, at least I didn't, you know, someone hit my car and ran a red light about a month ago, and it's, you know, at least I didn't go to the hospital. At least I walked away from the wreck. Sure, I got to get a new car, but there's so many other things that are worse. And if I can focus on the best case scenario of that situation, it keeps you just walking away without having anger, resentment, and all those things, which are directing all of your energy at all the wrong stuff. So you're not actually using your energy now for the things that you need to do.
Couldn't agree more.
So with Balbert Marketing, what is it in a sense that you do for the world? Who are, you know, people that we should send your way? What's the essence of your company?
Yeah, so I'll give you a short story that just tackles every little freaking thing that I can try to
All right.
tackle in the shortest amount of time possible. So, as I mentioned, COVID hits. I'm unemployed ultimately. I started part-time, not I was looking for jobs. I didn't exactly know where my next step would be, but I started my business on the side, kind of as a side hustle, and it started to pick up. The reason, one of the reasons it started to pick up is I started a locally based podcast called Rochester Business Connections. I was a minnow in a sea of sameness. So I decided to go as hyper niche as possible and only focus on Rochester, New York, my hometown, and did a lot of networking using podcasting, set up a LinkedIn profile to trying to find a job, eventually started using that LinkedIn profile for networking with the podcast, launched the marketing firm, and really just through the power of connection and podcasting and relationship building, one by one started to gain clientele. And having a marketing firm, which is primarily all my costs are, you know, online, it's not like I have a brick and mortar,
Right.
was able to slowly pick up clients without having to go from zero to hero overnight to pay the bills. But what I started to realize down the road, a couple, by now it's been 2 years in, was most of my clients, and the way I serve them is a first impression online. So their web design, their logo design, their social media content, how they show up on Google, where they show up on Google, once they're clicked on, does it convert? Those were the things I was doing for clients, and that's what I've always done. I'm good at it, but most of my clients were coming through LinkedIn, networking, and podcasting. So the future is I've got Balbert Marketing, but I took Real Business Connections, my podcast, and I've created a concierge service, Real Business Connection Concierge, where we don't have to get into every little detail, but we take the medium of podcasting and we help guests or hosts kind of create those connections, build the content, crush it using LinkedIn, podcasting, and networking. So it's kind of one of those things where you're providing service A, but B gets you the lead. And then
Right.
you have that aha moment. Why don't I sell? Well, I'm selling A. Why don't I just sell B? So there's the marketing entity that does all that online marketing stuff. And then there's the podcasting entity that takes the strategy end of LinkedIn networking and podcasting and provides that for clients. So those are categories that I serve, but this isn't a sales pitch. It honestly, if I can help you, that's great. If not, that's okay too.
Well, even just, you know, I know so many people that I really respect and appreciate their business. And just even following you, you know, you pick up so much stuff just from learning where, you know, when it's the right time or there's a need, then maybe it makes sense to do business together. But just being in the right circle with people, you can really level up.
100%. It's all about the right people. I joke, it's the CDC, the Chief Doc Connectors.
You're right. I love that.
The CDC.
That's a good one. And there's, it's interesting, you know, when I went to my first NLV, which is the conference or the summit that Sarah Elkins puts together, mm-hmm. I had been pretty well connected on LinkedIn, considering myself connected pretty well. That's why I ended up going to that event. But I had not done any networking of any worth in my hometown. And I grew up here. I started my business here. And I remember just thinking, this is my hometown. I feel like I know it like the back of my hand. This is where I live. How do I not have the right business connections here? Because most of my professional work was done just outside of the city I lived in. So it wasn't with those small businesses in the city. And I remember sitting there at the first NLV, sitting next to Chris Burvey, who was there, and he had written a book about sales, and he's very well connected in his area, and gave me some tips on how to network. And it really just changed the way I approached. So when to hear you talk about the connection between LinkedIn and podcasting and networking, how all three of those work and interact together, because I feel like one reinforces the other. You know, you network locally, and then someone connects with you on LinkedIn, and then they see the rest of your network or your background, or they hear your podcast. Any one of those is a great entry point, but they do all bring the whole package together. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful approach.
A mentor and good friend of mine, David Mamano, always says, Ben, I say this respectfully, but 2 years ago, I would have had no clue who you are. And then he usually laughs his ass off, and he's not wrong, mm-hmm. but and this isn't to really impress, it just to impress upon the point that I went Rochester, New York, business podcast using LinkedIn to connect with people. So when you look at that category, it was easy for me to be the famous or most popular. I'm doing the finger thing for anyone listening.
Right.
The most popular Rochester, New York business LinkedIn podcaster. So I created my own category so I wouldn't have to fight against these huge, large entities. And now I'm quote unquote famous, but really only for people that are from Rochester, New York on LinkedIn. Like 98% of Rochester has no clue who I am. But if you're on LinkedIn from Rochester, you right. do. But here's the thing, and I'm rambling, I don't need 10,000 clients either.
Right.
So if I can build my business just on that, that's enough legs to stand on.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think people lose sight of, is they get caught up on this idea of 10,000 followers and all the followers and the mass hysteria, yet we wouldn't even have the headspace to service that many people. So,
no.
You know, it's really, how much do you need? And let's build a sustainable business model that grows at the right size. Well, I could talk business and networking and marketing tactics for hours, but I do want to respect your time and your day. But before we go, I would love to just get one last piece of advice for our listeners on how you think they can own their awkward.
Sure. Can I give two pieces?
Definitely.
Because the first one we already went over, you don't have to do 30 days of flaws. I think it's great to commit to a certain amount, but make a list of the flaws that make you awesome. Are you rebellious? I am. Do you feel like you're boring or ordinary? That's good. Like, people need someone who's going to be straight as an arrow and get the job done. Do you feel like you're overly enthusiastic? It's also probably good. So maybe do 30 days of flaws, maybe make a list, but post something, put it out there and own that awkwardness. The other thing I like to tell people to do is once a day, it takes 45 seconds. You pick up your phone, you go to Messenger, you go to your messages, you go to your Instagram DMs, you scroll to the very, very bottom. Then you find people that you went to school with, you met at no longer virtual, you met at a conference, you met at all these different places. Just reach out to bring love and value into their life, say something positive, and just say hello. And if you do that once a day, it takes 45 seconds a day. You reach out to over 350 people. What is it? 365, sometimes six people a year. And we kind of talked about this. You don't know who needs it or who's struggling or who feels flaws or awkward. And even if just one out of those 365 texts is exactly what someone needs, it's worth the investment to put in that once a day. And that's one thing I encourage anybody to do that's easy to add into their schedule.
Yeah, that's a beautiful concept. And I love that you call out scrolling all the way to the bottom, because that just gets you past all of the people that are in your regular circle, right? It's not, oh, well, I'm reaching out to someone I haven't talked to for 3 months that I'm probably going to see in a week or two. It's someone that, who knows, and they're, to get a message like that out of the blue is a nice surprise. And like you said, who knows who needs to hear that?
Well, I want to just add a little comments. It doesn't have to be overly emotional. It doesn't have to be overly aggressive. The easiest way to do it sometimes is to go to your Facebook messages, find someone on Facebook, go to their profile, see what they're up to, and just make a comment like, oh my God, Johnny's 8 years old, blows my mind. It's been a while. That's all you have to say. Right. And in a business context, it really kicks ass. If you take your LinkedIn feed or your email feed and do that daily, some people say six touch points, 12. Nowadays, I feel like you need 5,000 touch points. The key is there's no such thing as too many touch points, as long as you're not being overly aggressive and you're bringing love and value into people's lives. So in a business context, in a networking context, if you're reaching out to one person each day, or even five each day, those are nice touch points that if you can serve them, they think of you. Mm-hmm. Or if they run into someone you can help, again, they think of you. Whether or not they think of you, you brought love into their life. So why not just do it for that reason as well?
Right. Yeah. Like you said, there's many different ways you can measure on why it's a good thing to do, but just bringing happiness and love and attention to them is enough in itself.
That's the worst that could happen.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love that. Ben, this has been an awesome conversation. I really appreciate all that you're doing. We've got links to your website and social media in the description. So I hope that everybody clicks on those, gives Ben some follows, some likes and shares, and definitely listen to your shows. You've got some great shows going on.
Doing the best, man. And if someone hasn't subscribed and rated this podcast, do that first, because I know going to the show notes and like finding me and finding an episode is actually a lot of additional work. In a minute, you could go rate this podcast and call it a day, but do show Andy some love as well. So I kind of want to add that in there at the end here.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thanks, man. Again, it's been awesome. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to staying connected and meeting you at some point when the worlds collide. So,
yes, sir. Thanks, man.
And everyone else, be sure that you go out and always, like always, own your awkward. Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.